Green Divas and Green Dudes come in many shades of green. Here to help you discover and celebrate your personal shade of green are hosts Green Diva Meg and Maxine Margot, veteran radio chicks who share important news about climate change and the plight of human existence, but somehow manage to make most of it fun and sexy using at least 50 shades of green. Well, hey, and welcome to another episode of 50 Shades of Green Divas. I'm Green Diva Meg.
Green Diva Max.
And we have a fun show for you.
Yes, interesting and informative.
Yeah, actually, we have been learning a lot about coyotes and how to coexist with them in our even urban areas now.
Mm-hmm.
And
they come into the cities. They come into the suburbs. They rest in sandwich shops. It's pretty interesting.
Well, and it's not just coyotes, but they do represent a lot of the other wildlife that, whether it's bears, coyotes, they're fox, they're turkeys. We have to learn to coexist because we've encroached in their area. They don't understand, like, oh, that's a border there. I don't.
Right. Yeah, you can't go on my property.
Go on my property.
I don't see any lines.
Yeah, they don't know about that.
They just know they need to do what they do to exist, and they need to eat, and they need to do things.
And you know what? They're not a bad part of the cycle, the environmental whatever cycle. Mm-hmm. They're important to the ecosystem.
Yes,
so
it's very important. I mean, most people know coyotes from cartoons.
Right.
They know Wile E. Coyote from the Looney Tunes.
Who kept Acme business.
Right, and the Roadrunner, you know, kind of a smart coyote, but stupid all at the same time. And, you know, people think the number one enemy of Wile E. Coyote was the Roadrunner, but actually gravity.
I said it was trucks because he also got run over
He had anvils on his head, and you know, and this is all making blueprints to eat, figure out a way to get the Roadrunner and get some food. But then we're in 2017, and in the last few years they came out with a descendant of Wile E. Coyote called Tech E. Coyote.
That's kind of cool.
Go figure.
I never knew.
Who knew? I mean, Tech E. Coyote, he got superpowers as a result of an explosion, you know, and it was a meteor that hit the town, and he became electrified, and he became magnetized,
super.
and he wore a green uniform, very
of course.
Apropos. And he, you know, his descendant of Wile E, and it's just really interesting because he has powers of molecular regeneration, magnetic manipulation,
and
he's a superhuman coyote. Superhuman coyote. You know, it's just important. He actually went to school. He went to Acme Tropolis University. So Acme Tropolis University, and then he met with one of his best friends. You know, he had Ace the Bunny as his best friend. But, you know, he also had the Rev Runner was a best friend. And you would think that the Rev Runner or Road Runner wouldn't be, but they became pals.
Aw, that's a sweet synopsis there.
Yes, I know.
So we're going to talk to, in a few minutes, stay tuned, because we're going to talk to a woman named Victoria
Alzapiti.
Mm-hmm. Cool last name.
She's cool.
And I really didn't know how much I didn't know. And I'm an animal lover and a wildlife lover, and I was surprised. And it's very encouraging, and it was an interesting conversation. So, look, before that, I just want to say we finally do have 50 Shades of Green Divas on Instagram and Twitter.
Right.
Woohoo!
Yippee on us.
And I think it's 50 Shades of GDs.
50 Shades of GDs. Okay, that's what you got to check out. We'll
and
have to tweet at you and Instagram things.
I've been very active in there having fun, and appreciate any interactivity with you all. In the meantime, you can go to thegreendivas.com to listen to these podcasts, other Green Divas podcasts. And, of course, you can go
to themanyshadesofgreen.com has podcasts as well.
Yeah.
So we have it on all platforms, iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, and everywhere we can find a device to have it on.
Yep. So stay tuned, because we've got some really interesting information that you should know about.
Do you suffer from allergies and chemical sensitivity? Then it's time to incorporate the EnviroCleanse system. Utilizing patented technology, the EnviroCleanse system safely and effectively neutralizes toxins without leaving behind harmful VOCs. From the solid and upholstered surfaces that surround us, to the clothes we wear, to the very air we breathe, EnviroCleanse provides personal environment protection for everyone. Use code GREENDIVAS to get 20% off site-wide at EnviroKLENZ.com.
This is James Cromwell, and you've been fortunate enough to be listening to 50 Shades of Green Divas, a wonderful program you should support. Thank you.
Guest that we're going to bring in right now for this current episode of 50 Shades of Green Divas. It's Victoria Alzapiti, and she is an amazing human on so many levels. She is the founder and principal at Breakthrough Insight Consulting. She is a public interest attorney and social justice entrepreneur who works to bring environmental issues to the forefront. She is a member of the Newcastle Conservation Board, and she also is the director of the Federated Conservationists of Westchester County. And she knows a thing or two about coyotes, which we want to, you know, delve into here today.
It's like I can't help myself, you know?
I've been reading too much about Wile E. Coyote and Tech E. Coyote.
That's
and
funny.
Roadrunners and Mark Twain, and we'll go into all that. You know, we'll catch through on that. So, you know, at this point, there's been a lot going on about coyotes, especially in the suburbs, even in cities. I mean, we've,
some,
you know,
of the parks are experiencing, yeah.
Well, not only that, in Chicago, there was a coyote brazen enough to go into a sandwich shop and hang out. and that's
he's
true.
He's a wily guy.
He's wild. He needed some food. And at that point, they kind of trapped him and brought him to a sanctuary. So he, you know, was actually stupid and smart all at the same time.
Well, the thing is, his sanctuary, he may be hungry. Maybe he doesn't have enough food, right?
Right. He needed to eat, and he felt
sandwiches were good. Can I tell you that not in this house. We're in New Jersey, right? We're in a, you know, it's not totally suburban, but I mean, there's some urban spots. But at any rate, the house that we used to live in, we had not only coyotes, but there was this mommy coyote and babies that used to park underneath our bedroom window at night, and they would all yip, 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 ooh, yip, oh, oh, yip, yip. And like, it was crazy. It was kind of creepy and cool at the same time. But they did wreak havoc with local wildlife, and we had big dogs. We had Newfies, so they didn't bother our dogs.
Right. Well,
but we did lose a cat to a coyote.
Wow, that's not.
That was a long time ago.
So with that, like, people get, you know, this picture of they're not, you know, they're afraid of them, and we have to live together. So can you give us a bit of an insight of what it's like to be a coyote in the burbs?
And from a
coyote perspective, you know, what are they seeing? And then we'll go into what we're seeing and how we can coexist.
Okay, I love how you're framing that. It's probably the most wise way to look at things, because if we can get in the heads of our, you know, coyote friends who live in the woods around us and often are seen in our own backyards, we can kind of work with them and kind of understand what they're thinking to prevent negative encounters with them and really promote coexistence. And I really just first want to tell you that I'm really thrilled to be on your show. I think it's great that you are bringing this important topic out into the open and talking about it. Because as you said earlier, this is an issue that really does impact the whole country, you know, in communities all over, rural communities, suburban and urban as well. And what we've seen over the decades is the western coyote, who, you know, started out living on the western part of the country, you know, California and the West Coast, and we saw the western coyote kind of move over towards the east and kind of go up north and come back down the northeast. And what we now have are coyotes that have essentially populated the entire continental U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're in every state. You know, I don't know if they've ever seen one in Hawaii yet, but they've started being seen even on Long Island. So they've reached the islands as well.
Wow.
They're good swimmers. And, wow. You know, the question is, how do we coexist with these animals who are really, you know, well-intentioned? They're just trying to survive in the wild,
yeah,
as all wild animals are. And, you know, now that we're seeing them in the suburbs and in the urban settings, a lot of that, if you think about, you know, why is that happening? I mean, think about all of the development that's gone on over the past few decades.
Right.
And, you know, we really are, as human beings, interfering more and more with their habitats. And so what winds up happening is our own backyards are part of their territory. You know, if you think about coyote families, they typically have a territory, you know, anywhere from about 2 miles around to about 10 miles. And, you know, each day they're kind of walking around their territories, hunting for food and trying to really keep other wild canids out. So coyotes are really interesting in terms of managing their own populations. You know, a lot of people in the suburbs hear about coyotes and they think about, you know, the fact that, oh, we're going to have an overpopulation. And what they forget is that if we leave coyotes alone, they manage their own numbers. You know,
right.
They have,
really?
You know, a male and female, alpha male, alpha female, and they're the parent coyotes. And they have a litter once a year. You know, you were talking about the pups that were right under your window a few minutes ago, Meg.
Yeah.
And, you know, they will have their one litter a year, and then they raise those pups, and the pups disperse and find their own territories, and they don't have another litter till the next year. So they're very good at managing their own numbers. And really, you know, they're very good also at raising their babies. So they teach their pups what to eat, what not to eat, how to kind of stay away from humans.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very good parents. And when you think about their diets, you know, as you mentioned earlier, people are very concerned about their own pets and their, you know, their cats and their dogs and don't want to see them get into conflict with coyotes, of course. So it's important to kind of remember that pets are not a significant part of a coyote's diet. So a lot of people don't realize, but coyotes eat, I would say, primarily, you know, small rodents like mice and rats and other small creatures. And they also eat fruits and berries. So, you know, they're kind of a very good source to have in our ecosystems because they keep the rodent population down.
Yeah,
And they also eat roadkill, which is a nice little side benefit.
Roadkill. Yeah. Saw a remnants of a deer, and it was definitely eaten by a coyote. There was like a bone left or something.
Oh, I have
and someone's
one of those
property
stories too.
Yeah, my neighbor was like, "What?"
We at the same property where the coyotes used to serenade us from time to time. We had two newfies, and we got this baby boy golden retriever. And this stuff only happens when Wayne's out of town, right? So I have like 10-year-old girls for my daughter's birthday party, and this little puppy comes to the back door with a whole leg of a deer in his mouth. And we're like, what the hell?
I'd be screaming.
So then, like, we bag it up, we put it away, and then, like, the next day comes with the jaw of the deer. We're like, okay, where is this coming from?
One piece at a time, right?
So we just put him on a leash and let him lead us up the hill. We live by the woods, and there was a site that clearly coyotes had their way with however this deer died. I don't know if it was – I don't think it was hunters. It was too close to the house.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You don't know when – how the things happen in, you know, in nature and things between actual roadkill or actual kill-kill.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We were concerned that there was a hunter close to the house, and we called, and, you know, they said, no, that was probably coyotes. I'm like, really? Wow. That's like, oh, scary.
That's scary.
Right. And, yeah, white-tailed deer are one of the primary sources of food for coyotes. Typically, they're not kind of big enough or strong enough to take down a large deer unless it's sick. So they'll usually kind of, you know, take out the smaller deers and, you know, and the sick deers and deers that have already, you know, been killed or hit by a car.
Right.
And, you know, in many respects, if you think kind of more broadly about the ecosystem, at least, you know, here in Westchester and many parts of the country, there's an overpopulation of deer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really, the scientists are looking very closely now at whether coyotes are going to kind of naturally help keep that population in check. And there hasn't been enough research yet to show definitively whether or not that's the case, but there has been a lot of anecdotal data about, you know, the fact that they may be starting to have some impact on helping to control the deer population. As much as we love deer, we know that they do have damaging impacts in terms of, you know, over-browsing in forests. And
well, it used to be when I was a kid, if there was a deer in the backyard, everybody went to the window, like, oh my God, there's a deer, and everybody's freaking out. Now, like, I'm yelling at them, please stop eating.
And they just, and they look at you.
And they look at me like I'm interrupting their dinner.
Right. We had these beautiful impatiens planted. We did it every year. And then a couple of years ago, my husband's looking at the front. They look lovely. It's beautiful. The next morning, they were gone.
Shaved down.
They were shaved down. And I'm like, because I kept saying, deer food, deer food, deer.
I know. You know, they're not as cute when they eat your stuff.
Yeah, they're not that cute when that happens.
I always feel so bad because I do have a sense that we've encroached in their world.
Sure.
And, you know, we have black bear, we have coyotes, we have fox, we have turkey, we have all the stuff. I mean, and we're not that far from the city, you know.
This is true.
Right.
This is true.
Right. I mean, and even in the city now, I mean, if you look at the news, you know, search on Google for coyote in New York City over the past few years, there have been many sightings of coyotes there, you know, Queens and right in Manhattan and in the Bronx. And so definitely they are kind of moving, you know, as I said earlier, into urban settings. And you talked about Chicago.
Right.
Chicago is probably one of the most interesting case studies on coyotes because they've started to actually monitor them and collar them, radio collar them over the years. And so they've looked at specific coyotes and watched their behavior and where they're traveling and what they're eating. And there are about 2,000 coyotes in Chicago.
What?
And so even with that number of coyotes, there has never been an attack on a person.
It's the pan
and
pizza.
This is significant.
They like pan pizza. That must be the deep,
yes,
it's the deep dish Chicago pizza and the coyotes. It's like, you know, they don't want a New York slice. They want deep dish. You know, they
exactly.
like, you know, that's
the discerning coyote.
Right. Yeah. Well,
very few people know that. I'm glad we're covering that on the show.
Well, you heard it here first, people. Right. Well, you also, yeah, they've been prowling around Beverly Hills for a long time, too. I mean, they've spotted in Beverly Hills and you know.
Well, that's because they have spas in Beverly Hills.
That's right. Yeah. They go to the special spa.
But
for,
in all
for
seriousness, I know we're having fun. We're really.
Yeah,
we're
getting off the deep end.
Victoria, you are such a green diva.
Yes, you are a green diva.
Thank you.
No problem.
But you mentioned that,
that's
you know, of all those coyotes in Chicago, deep dish loving coyotes, that no attacks on humans were noted. But here in my town, actually, a few years back, someone was really viciously attacked by a coyote. And
yeah, do you know if it was a rabid coyote?
I don't think it was, but what it was is she had a dog with her on a leash, and I think they determined that that whole scenario just exploded very badly.
So, yeah, and there have been certain instances. You know, I always try to say that.
Yeah.
In the course of recorded North American history, including Canada and all the United States, only two people have been killed by coyotes in the course of history here.
Wow. Yeah.
And one of them, they both involved feeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one thing that we always say to never, ever do is to feed a coyote, either intentionally or inadvertently.
Right.
So I think one of those cases was a toddler whose father was feeding the coyotes.
Oh.
And once you start feeding the coyotes, it's very hard to say, you know, not today. They become, you know, what we call kind of food dependent.
Yeah.
And once you take the food away, they can really become more aggressive, understandably so. The other death was up in Canada. It was a camper who was at a campsite where they were known to feed wildlife.
Yeah.
So the first thing I always say is always please make sure not to intentionally, you know, some people think they're beautiful and we should never, ever, ever feed any wild animal, including coyotes. And also unintentionally, a lot of people put food on their patios, either for their dog or for the feral cats. And you just have to realize that the coyotes can start eating and become dependent. So that's my first piece of guidance for everyone. And building on what you were saying earlier, Meg, you know, there have been a few, you know, some instances of attacks. And when they've looked at those and kind of categorically broken them down, some of them are rabies related.
Yeah.
And also, that's another area that we have to keep in perspective, because coyotes, unlike skunks and dogs and cats and bats, they're actually less vulnerable to rabies.
Right.
So it's not like we have a lot of rabid coyotes around, but it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any wild animal is vulnerable. So any coyote that looks ill,
yeah,
and that looks, you know, confused or disoriented, absolutely people should immediately contact the authorities, and it's in everyone's best interest to take that animal out of its misery. Right. And there have been some instances also where people have interjected, you know, tried to break up a fight between their dog and a coyote.
Yeah, I think that's
and,
probably
you know, once they're engaged, it's very, very difficult to break them up.
Yeah,
I mean,
we'd
see that even with dogs and other dogs.
Yep. Right, there's a lot of that, and a lot of dogs biting humans, and, you know, there's more of that than the coyote incidents,
probably.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. People and dogs are much more vulnerable to bites right. by dogs. And, of course, I have a dog. I love dogs.
Right.
But they are actually a bit more unpredictable than coyotes are.
That's why people are fearful in a way when they hear these stories. And, like, they go, well, isn't it better if we trap the coyote? And and so does that really solve the problem, you know, of them being – I mean, what – there seems to be more of a problem with that in terms of breaking up the family and then causing the teens to be more brazen. Is that true?
Yeah, so very good point. So I think, and you know, especially living in the suburbs, I mean, I'm personally new to the suburbs. You know, I've lived in urban settings most of my life and have been up in Westchester for about 9 years now. And what you start seeing is that when people have a quote-unquote problem on their property, they call someone.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a quote-unquote pest, if there's something that they don't want, there's always someone who you can hire to take it away, you know. And I think what happens with coyotes is people think, you know, it's as if someone had, you know, a woodchuck problem. And again, I love woodchucks, but some people are disturbed by their impact on their lawns, and they call someone to trap it and take it away. It's a little bit different with coyotes. And to your point, Maxine, you know, when you think about coyote biology, coyote reproductive biology,
right.
and we start understanding how they reproduce and how their family structure works. So kind of building on what I said earlier, every year you have, you know, these alpha male and female who maintain the parameters of the territory and raise their litter every year. And what's really fascinating on a biological level is that that couple, that alpha male and female, are the only coyotes in that territory who will mate each year. And there are other coyotes in their family. They often have the females from the previous year, kind of the adolescent yearlings, who will stay behind and help raise the pups.
Right.
Those girls, and there can be two or three of them, as long as there's that intact male and female parent set, they are behaviorally sterile. And so what that means is they don't go into estrus. They can't have babies.
Interesting.
They can't reproduce as long as the parents are intact. It's a fascinating biological reality of the coyote world.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Behaviorally sterile? I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, you can Google it and you'll get information.
Cool.
It's really, and I've spoken to behavioral ecologists who focus on coyotes and, you know, the experts around the country to learn over all of this over the years. And it's truly fascinating, and most people don't realize that. So what happens is, let's say I happen to have in my backyard a male, you know, a coyote who's coming through my yard. And I think, oh, I don't want this. I don't want anything to happen to my dog, and it's interfering, and it's my property, and they shouldn't be here.
Trespassing.
And I call a trapper, and that trapper comes and catches and traps that male coyote. And by the way, here in New York and in many states, relocating a coyote is illegal. So because coyotes are very family-oriented and tied to their territories, if you relocate them even hundreds of miles away, they will try to come back.
Right.
And they often are hit by cars, or they'll get into conflicts with coyotes in other territories and get killed. So it's considered inhumane. So if I have a trapper come in, they will have to legally kill the coyote, and suddenly that male is not going back to its family.
Oh,
and so what happens is all bets are off.
Right.
You no longer have the behavioral sterility, and you have all of the girls now going into estrus. So instead of having that one litter a year, you have the mother becoming pregnant, and then you have the three daughters also having litters. And what happens, you suddenly have a huge increase in your coyote population.
Right.
So it really is what we call destabilizing to the coyote family units. And also, you know, often when you hire a trapper, they can't tell which coyote they're catching.
Sure.
So coyotes, you know, don't have name tags. We can't tell if it's, you know, coyote A or coyote B.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they will catch, you know, multiple coyotes, and suddenly, you know, you have even the yearlings killed who are helping to raise the pups.
Oh, no.
And so you wind up with pups who are not properly raised, right? So right now, it's a good time to be doing this interview because we're in coyote pupping season.
Oh.
So the coyotes are just out of the den, the little puppies, and the mothers and fathers and siblings are trying to raise those puppies to, as I said earlier, you know, behave well and eat the right food and be averse to humans.
Right.
And if suddenly there's no one around to raise the puppies or the puppies are orphaned, then they're going to, you know, theoretically get into more trouble.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Wind up, you know, more likely to get into conflict.
They turn into teenage terrorizing coyotes because they don't have the proper upbringing and they get very brazen.
Much like with many other animals, wild animals that we've encountered in the suburbs, whether it's bats or bears, it's just a matter of educating ourselves to
mm-hmm.
adapt
yep.
and understand their behavior.
And coexist.
And so we don't, so we can coexist more peacefully and we don't interfere with things that could create conflict. And I think, tell us how people can find out more about what you're doing specifically, and then maybe in other areas how people might find out more
about coyotes.
Well, yeah, I mean, to reiterate and build on what you're saying, education and prevention are the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be remiss for me to say that the best way to prevent conflicts between your pet and a dog and a coyote is to really never leave your dog out or your cat out unattended.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as a person is near a pet outside, the mere presence of that person, if they're about, you know, 6 feet away, whether the dog is on a leash or right nearby on your lap, the coyote will be much less likely. They're constantly doing kind of a cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah.
And so as much as they might want to, you know, come after your dog, if you're right there, they're going to think it's not worth it because you might harm them.
Yeah.
So rule number one, please, please, anyone listening to this, even if you haven't heard of a coyote sighting, you know, more and more we're having coyote sightings pages come up on the web, on Facebook, and I always tell people, if you live in an area with coyotes, even if you don't hear that there's been one on your street this morning, assume that they're around. They're all around us, and you are not necessarily seeing them.
Right.
But please never leave your dog outside without you.
And by the way,
and in terms of cats as well, you know, a lot of people let their cat out, and that is a little bit of assuming a risk. You know, once your cat's outside alone, it's a bit more vulnerable.
I think it's a different world. We used to, our one cat that's 20 years old now used to be an outdoor cat, and then after this incident with another cat of ours, we pulled her inside. She's been an indoor cat for the last, I'd say, 15 years, and I think, we have two cats, and they're inside, and the other dogs, you know, my dog is always supervised.
Couple more quick tips, like hazing and not feed, you know, just quickly.
Yeah, so, you know, there's also a belief that if you let the coyote know that it's not wanted, if the coyote fears you, it will leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people think that coyotes are inherently afraid of people. My understanding is that coyotes are human averse. They don't want to come near humans. They're not necessarily terrified of them, but it's a risk to get anywhere close. So what I always say to people is, you know, if you see a coyote, it's very likely that it will stop and look at you. It's
mm-hmm.
They're very smart and very curious. So they're going to look at you and want to kind of see what's going on, and you need to tell them, I'm not safe to be near.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, Maxine, you know, hazing is making yourself big, you know, putting your arms out, waving and screaming. And interestingly, with coyotes, it's really important to make direct eye contact. They need to know that you're directing
It's like an alpha thing.
Talk about, we can actually use the word alpha bitch for female coyotes. And we've used this throughout a couple of shows in the past.
We have to become the alpha bitch in this regard.
Exactly. We need to do that.
Right. I mean, this is the chance to really kind of say,
you know,
I'm the boss here and you need to leave.
Right.
And sometimes that means, in addition to being loud and making yourself look big, sometimes it means, you know, taking a rolled up newspaper and hitting your knee, you know, making a loud noise. Some people will have in their backyards or when they're walking their dog a can, you know, aluminum soda can with pennies in it, and you shake it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a louder noise than a lot of people realize, and that can be scary. I often say, you know, put a few pebbles or little sticks in your pocket so that if, you know, you see a coyote nearby, the motion of throwing something towards the coyote, and not intended to hurt the coyote, but just kind of to say, I'm invading your space, I'm throwing something towards you,
yeah.
that can be threatening and also encourage them to move. Yeah. So, you know, being prepared with noisemakers, basically.
No, a coyote tambourine. That's
well,
it. I think we should start selling coyote.
Market that.
It's like a tambourine with a picture of a coyote, and it has the noise. It makes the noise, and it's not as crappy as walking around with a can with pennies in it.
Well,
it's kind of like more fun,
like
you know?
Singing and dancing with your tambourine. The coyote probably just think you're nuts and
or,
leave.
Right, and, right. You know, we'll start doing Dylan tunes. You know, yeah. But it's sing Mr. Tambourine Man. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, so, and you know, one thing they always say too is mix it up.
Right.
Yeah. So some people will have their little air horn in their pocket.
Yeah, I have it.
But like anything, you know, coyotes can become habituated, and what I mean by that is used to something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times now in urban and suburban environments, they're used to seeing people.
Right.
They're used to seeing cars. They're used to seeing our activities. And they're watching. They're curious. So we need to shake it up. If you're going to use, you know, a horn, that's great. Maybe the next time you use a can, maybe you use your tambourine the third time. But almost have a toolkit, I always say, to really make sure that you're continuing to scare them away. And it may take a couple of times. I've heard a lot of situations where someone will haze, you know, and the coyote will take a few steps away.
Right.
And then turn around.
Right, and they don't.
And start looking back and saying,
right.
Hey, they'll look at you again.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, my God, this is such a bold, aggressive coyote. And what I've tried to tell them is the coyote is doing what it naturally does. It's curious. It's turning around.
Yeah.
And it's testing you. It's kind of saying, oh, is it really okay? Can I stay here?
Yeah.
And then you have to do it again.
All
and
right.
So it's reinforcing the message and having everyone in your community also take these measures so that the coyote knows from everyone that it needs to stay away. And, you know, coyotes don't know where the boundary lines of our properties are. Right.
Right.
I mean, a lot of us have woods around us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For everyone to reinforce. So I just wanted to make sure to put that out there.
Okay.
Great.
And, you know, there are some wonderful resources around the country that people can turn to.
Okay.
There's a great organization called Project Coyote.
.org?
They are, I think they're based in California, but they are, you know, they do work across the board in all states around the country.
Great.
And their website is www.projectcoyote.org.
Great.
Cool.
And then there's another organization called Coyote Coexistence.
Uh-huh.
I think they're on the web as www.coyotecoexistence.com.
Okay.
And the Humane Society of the United States has some really, really great resources online as well.
Good.
Great tips. They have a great graphic that actually shows the coyote reproductive dynamics.
Oh, cool.
So if you want to search for those, that's a great resource to share with your neighbors.
Okay.
But both of these groups have wonderful videos and fact sheets. So those are places that I would definitely say, you know, turn to on their websites, on their Facebook pages, and they're a great resource of information.
And one last one, YouTube Go Away Coyote, is that?
Yeah, there's a video, Go Away Coyote. One of my favorite videos online is how to shoo off a coyote. It gives you great tips about what to do when you see a coyote, what to do when you have a dog with you. So there's some really, really good practical information online that people should definitely avail themselves to.
And how can people find out more about you, Victoria?
How can they find out more about me? They can go to a Facebook page that I'm the administrator of called Newcastle Coyote Facts. And I'm always posting videos and fact sheets. They can ask questions there, you know, and it's a nice supportive community to kind of give each other guidance. We have some scientists on the page, coyote biologists who are, you know, also available to answer questions as well.
Great. Well, you know, I'm so glad you're doing the work you're doing. Thank you. The coyotes, thank you.
Oh.
And because we do have to coexist. I'm an animal lover, so I get really upset when I see, you know, dead animals on the side of the road or whatever it is,
yeah.
Because I feel like we have encroached in their world. They don't understand what's happening. You know, we kind of
right.
do.
Well, humans are superior, don't you know?
Oh, yeah.
We've got one in the one in the White House right now.
Well, Victoria.
Yeah, but there is so much potential. There's so much potential for us to coexist. And again, we have to remember, you know, a biologist once said to me that every animal in the wild plays a role and makes a contribution.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And if we remember that we're all part of a web, and we need to kind of learn each other's purpose and reason for being here and support each other as we go about our day-to-day life.
Beautiful, beautiful way to close our segment today. And thank you again, and I hope we get to talk to you soon again, Victoria. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks
for
Victoria.
The work you do.
You've been listening to the 50 Shades of Green, a collaborative gig between the Green Divas and the Many Shades of Green radio shows, happily recorded at Green Diva Studio. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts and the Many Shades of Green on iHeartRadio, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and Stitcher, among other places. You can find more information about this show and much more on thegreendivas.com.